Oh, hello there. Wherever you're listening, however you're listening, 88.1 FM or streaming us live from anywhere in the world on the WIPR app or at WIPR.org, this is Midday. My name's Gabe Ortiz, filling in for the immortal Tom Hall, and I'll be with you for the next 60 minutes. Thank you so much for choosing to spend even a little bit of your day, wherever you are, with us here at WIPR. On the docket for today at 12:40, we'll be talking with Brian Sears of Maryland Matters about Westmore failing to reach an agreement with the biggest state workers union in Maryland by the December 31st deadline. In about 20 minutes, we'll be sitting down with Aziza Peace, a youth violence intervention group in the city, about their work and how the decline in homicides and gun violence is affecting that work. But right now, we're happy to welcome into Studio A, Dan Belson, the public safety reporter for the Baltimore Sun.
Thanks for having me, Gabe.
Thank you so much for joining us today. So before we kind of get into the nitty gritty here, why don't you just let people know what kind of reporting you do at the Baltimore Sun?
Yeah, so I cover public safety for Baltimore City. That's Baltimore Police. I also cover the courts quite a bit. I also cover the federal courts a bit, and that kind of extends outside of the city.
So for people who are not keeping up with the news as much as people like you and me are, why don't you just give folks a brief overview of what the past 2 years or so have looked like for Baltimore City when it comes to homicides and gun violence?
Yeah, so, you know, we've seen a very significant drop in homicides and non-fatal shootings, you know, just in the past couple of years. Back in 2022, when I first started at Baltimore Sun Media, there were 333 homicides that year. That's gone down. It's at 133 in 2025. So we've seen a significant drop, and that's been going for a couple of years. We're now seeing, kind of looking at what really led to that and how we keep that going.
And, you know, to piggyback off of that last part of your statement there, what led to that? Mm-hmm. I think the mayor's office would say that it's the Group Violence Intervention and Reduction Plan mm-hmm. that has been the flagship program of Mayor Brandon Scott's tenure thus far mm-hmm. as the mayor of Baltimore. And what really is that? Again, for folks who may not be familiar with what the flagship program of the mayor has been thus far, what is GVRS?
So the Group Violence Reduction Strategy is basically, it's kind of an intervention strategy. The key to it is really police and Monsi, the mayor's Office of Neighborhood and Safety Engagement, really reaching out to folks who are most likely to be victims of gun violence and kind of steering them in a different direction. I know sometimes it starts with a letter from the mayor to the person saying, you know, we need to turn this around.
Sure.
Come do this and we'll do that.
And this is a 5-year plan that was set out when mm-hmm. it was first conceived by the mayor and his team. And that 5 years is coming to an end. So recently, about a week ago, a press conference was held to talk about what the next chapter of GVRS looks like. And when you were at that press conference, what did the mayor say when we're talking about what the next phase is?
Yeah, so we're looking at GVRS is a component of this 5-year plan, which is, I believe it's called the Comprehensive Violence Prevention Plan. And that started in 2021. You know, I think coming up, the mayor's office wants to capitalize on a lot of the success that's come from that. You know, we've seen some significant changes and a lot of that is going to continue. I think what the mayor said and his folks basically talked about, you know, they want to engage with the community a lot. Sure. About this plan and really feed into it.
And we've seen over many different tenures throughout Baltimore City, when it comes to whoever's presiding over that mayoral office, a lot of different approaches to solving gun violence, solving the, you know, record high numbers of homicides that the city has seen over the decades. And it's gone from, you know, mass incarceration mm-hmm. to many different things along that spectrum. Mm-hmm. And we've now seen this unprecedented level of success when it comes to what Mayor Brandon Scott and his team have decided to do alongside Monsi, the mayor's Office of Neighborhood Safety and Engagement, which is headed up by Stephanie Mavronis. And we're seeing all of this success that comes from it. And it's something that leans away from over-policing. It's something mm-hmm. that the mayor has made very clear he wants to avoid having mass incarceration or avoiding what we've seen, particularly in the late 90s, early 2000s. Mm-hmm. And now we're seeing an evolution of that, right?
Right.
I think that the mayor's perspective has been, we have reached a level of success that we were hoping to reach. Now we need to grow this into something that will last beyond whoever's, you know,
right,
in that mayoral office. And when we look at all the different players that go into this in city government, obviously Mayor Brandon Scott is a central figure for that. Can you talk a little bit about Monsi and Stephanie Mavroinis, who's the director of Monsi, and just what that role in this entire plan and the success that they've had is?
Yeah, so Monsi is this agency, and I believe it had another name under prior mayors, but Mayor Scott has really kind of transformed it into the front of his violence reduction program. They handle, you know, a lot of programs, like they handle the GVRS, they handle Safe Streets, which is more of a mediation, conflict mitigation system. They handle things for youth justice, such as Sidestep was a program that was piloted. And I think we've seen over the past several years, we've seen these programs were piloted under the mayor. And now we're starting to see them really solidify, and the mayor's office is going to have to figure out how to really make those work in the long term.
Sure. My name is Gabe Ortiz, filling in for Tom Hall here on Midday, speaking with Dan Belson, public safety reporter at the Baltimore Sun, about the city's next anti-violence plan. As we stated earlier, Mayor Scott and city leaders held a press conference last week and had this to say about the city's next public safety plan.
This year, we will release a new five-year comprehensive violence prevention plan that will help us build on the work that we have started. We will maintain our focus on reducing homicides by at least 15% each year. We will keep investing in the strategies that are working as we work to build a better, safer Baltimore, a city where every resident can attend a good school, buy a home, and build a life, a city where folks have the resources and training they need to pursue a good-paying career, a city where our young people are invested in and encouraged to reach their full potential, a city that puts those closest to the problem at the heart of the solution.
And a sentiment that has been echoed by Mayor Brandon Scott and his team for quite some time now is this is good, but it's not good enough. Any, if there's one homicide in Baltimore a year, that's too many. When you were at this press conference last week, was that sentiment still in the air?
Absolutely, absolutely. I think, you know, a lot of the talk there was, it was a celebratory event, you know, but it was also this is only the beginning, we need to go much further. You know, 133 homicides is still, you know, that's not something you see in any other county in the state, you know, and I think going down 15% each year will be a challenge, but it's already been accomplished in the past several years.
And something that I think is worth noting is that State's Attorney Ivan Bates was in attendance at this press conference, and this is the first time that we've seen him and the mayor stand side by side in a public setting since they traded barbs not too long ago in regards to a lot of the issues that State's Attorney Ivan Bates and his team have with Monsi, which is the mayor's, again, his flagship program during his tenure as mayor of Baltimore. What did you take away from that, from him being there and him speaking as well, correct?
Right. He did speak. And I do think, you know, I think for both of them, they have had their differences. They have had conflicts since the state's attorney took office. Usually they don't reach the public level. They have. I think the thing is, both of them want to see crime reduced. I think they have very different approaches to how they want to accomplish that and different approaches to what they think is the problem. So, you know, the state's attorney will speak a lot about quality of life crimes. The mayor seems a little more focused on, you know, gun violence specifically. That's where that rift is. But I think in the end, they do see this as a success, and they do also trade barbs over, you know, who gets more credit for that.
Sure. And just one more question before I let you get out of here, Dan. Again, my name's Gabe Ortiz, speaking with Dan Belson, public safety reporter for the Baltimore Banner. What's the biggest question that you're going to be looking out for when this next plan gets rolled out? I think a lot of different people have a lot of different thoughts about where the immediate future of Baltimore City and its public safety approach should go. And when you listen to city leaders, when you listen to community members, and when you listen to the mayor himself, What are some of the things that you think are going to have to be answered over the immediate future for, you know, how they can carry this success into the long term and not just have this be a good couple of years in Baltimore, but actually be the beginning and a foundation of some serious healing that this city is in need of?
I think while speaking with community members and community leaders, you know, what keeps coming up is these quality of life crimes. You know, we were that press conference was held in Penn North, then, which is, you know, known for drug trafficking, et cetera. And that has come up quite a bit. And while it's not necessarily violent crime, it does, what one community leader said to me, you know, it's part of the reason why people cast doubt on the numbers, the violent crime numbers going down. It's part of the reason people don't feel as safe. And addressing that without getting into the same type of, you know, zero tolerance, aggressive policing that got Baltimore police into consent decree, all that will be a challenge coming up, finding the right way to address that. There's also the issue of collaborating with politics, you know,
sure, yeah.
You know, the rift between Mayor Scott and Ivan Bates can be a difficult thing, and there may be other political issues in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. Know? And, you know, something you mentioned there was those quality of life crimes, mm-hmm. And that was State Attorney Ivan Bates's main point when he first got elected, mm-hmm. was we need to do something about quality of life crimes in Baltimore. And now you've seen this historic leaps in reducing homicides and gun violence, and mm-hmm. I feel like those quality of life crimes have kind of taken a back seat in terms mm-hmm. of the big conversations around Baltimore City and public safety. Mm-hmm. And I now see them kind of coming back up again
right.
on the back of this press conference that just mm-hmm. happened. Well, Dan, I really want to thank you for coming in today. This was excellent. I know our audience members and listeners really, really appreciated it. And we would love to have you back sometime. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Coming up next here on Midday, we're going to be speaking with the founder of Aziza Peace, a youth intervention program here in the city, working with particularly young women in the city and LGBTQ youth about all the work that they're doing and what these leaps in reductions in homicide and violence throughout the city means for the work they're doing. All that and more coming up on the other side. My name's Gabe Ortiz. You're listening to Midday on 88.1 WIPR, Baltimore's NPR news station.
This is 88.1 WYPR, Baltimore's NPR news station.
Welcome back into Midday. My name's Gabe Ortiz, filling in for Tom Hall. We just wrapped up speaking with the public safety reporter for the Baltimore Sun, Dan Belson, about the press conference that took place last week in regards to the next chapter of Mayor Brandon Scott's anti-violence plan here in the city, which has seen so much success over the past 2 years. If you missed that conversation, you can check it out later today on WYPR.org or on the WYPR app. Right now, though, I'm very excited to welcome into Studio A here at WYPR. She's the executive director and chief change maker at Aziza Peace, Saran Fawcett. Saran, how are we doing today?
I'm pretty awesome. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Oh, well, thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate it. So before we do a deep dive here, why don't you just give people who are unfamiliar with your organization a brief overview of what Aziza Peace is and what they do?
Well, Aziza Peace is a pretty unique experience for young people, but a very safe space, a space that allows them to be themselves. We use fashion and fitness, arts, music, entertainment, and education to address social and emotional learning, social determinants of health, life and critical thinking skills development. And we focus especially on Black girls and LGBT youth, but we accept anyone. And we focus on the ages of 14 to 24.
And what was the inspiration for forming this organization?
My daughter, Nyla Aziza. She was going to a predominantly white, very elitist school, and I thought, how do I protect her Blackness when she goes there? And then I realized that many of the girls who look like her, the mothers work a lot, single family homes. What do we do to keep these young women on track to improve their quality of life or to ensure that they have a positive quality of life? And I quit my job.
Wow. So this became your full-time
it
job,
did.
Is operating Aziza Peace.
It did. It took 18 years for it to become a full-time job, wow, but it yeah. is now.
And so when you first founded this organization, was it ever in your mind that it would become what it is today?
It would
become this foundational piece for so many young people and their families throughout Baltimore?
It was. It has not reached where it's going to be. I'm going to be like the Chick-fil-A of youth programs without the homophobia and
sure.
all that. Yeah.
Will you be open on Sundays?
I will be.
Okay. All right. Good. So when I saw this program, the reason why I personally wanted to bring you onto the show was because I think it's a good part of the conversation that a lot of people are having in Baltimore right now. And we're seeing all these numbers, mm-hmm. right? There's a lot of numbers that people talk about nowadays. You know, these historic lows over 50 years in homicide, this percent reduction in gun violence and carjackings and all these other things. And those are great. Those are good that less people are dying in the city. But I've always been very curious of if people are feeling that difference, particularly young people who I feel often are some of the biggest victims of gun violence in the city, whether they are directly victims of it, suffering gun violence, or whether it's the people around them in their home lives or their school lives or whatever it may be, being forced to face instability because of that violence. And if that effect is being felt with our young people in the city, that I believe is where the true progress is made. And so I'm curious, as somebody who works very intimately with young people in the city, are you and are the young people you work with feeling a difference in the public safety of Baltimore City?
And that's an amazing question. I will say that I'm aware of the difference because we see the numbers. If I were not aware of it from an external lens, I would not know the difference. Our children don't feel the difference. They have the same fear when they're going to school, when some of them are traveling from east to west and vice versa. They have the same fears about something happening. They have the same fears about an uncle or a brother not coming home. We have the same fears, the mothers that are afraid that they're going to send their child home and they're not going to come back. The fears are the same. So I don't know that we feel the difference in an intimate way. I don't know that we see that.
Sure. And when it comes to the work that you and your team do, whether it's in the arts, whether it's in, you know, intervention work of trying to remove young people from those dangerous situations, wherever it may be, do you find yourself ever working with the city to achieve those things, whether it's just through offering resources, whether it's just through thought collaboration, whatever it may be? Do you find the city as a viable partner for trying to achieve the goals that you're trying to achieve?
Yes and no. We are very committed to young people, and the young people come citywide. So by default, you have to work with the city
sure.
to positively impact them. We have been funded. We were part of the Muncie intervention prevention space,
okay.
especially for Black girls and LGBT youth. So we've worked with the city in that way to address matters there. And we are funded by some of the people who invest in city policies and the change that we want to see. And I personally am on the committee to create the youth master plan for the city. So I do think that we work directly with the city, but our love and our purpose is rooted in shifting the lives of the young people
sure.
that we serve. So the political thing we're very aware of,
mm-hmm.
but the passion is in making our young people aware so that they become the change we need to see. That's where we are.
My name's Gabe Ortiz, speaking right now with Saran Fawcett, the executive director and founder of Aziza Peace, Enriching Young People in Baltimore, and talking about the city's approach to dealing with violence, particularly as it pertains to young people. Now, you said in the beginning of our conversation that you have a focus on young women in the city and LGBTQ youth. What unique challenges do those groups of people face here in Baltimore?
So we're talking about unaddressed trauma. And when that happens, we have anger and we have things that they do that they probably shouldn't do or that they could do. They could respond differently if we addressed what they experienced. So Black girls are expelled and suspended from school more than anybody. So where are they going
really?
When they're not in school? What are they doing, right? And when we have LGBT kids, because of the the space that people live in with that, the rejection. So now they're couch surfing, they're thrown out of their homes, and they're outside, they're out in the street. So we're dealing with mental illness, we're dealing with safety, we're dealing with a lot of things when we start addressing their needs. and mental health is a serious thing. Suicidal ideations are a real thing, especially for LGBT people. And if I can't eat, if I am not home and I don't know where my meal is coming from, I don't know how I'm going to get clothes, what am I doing to do that? So we become that safe space and provide those wraparound services to shift that behavior by shifting the mindset. You know what I mean?
And when you talk about shifting the mindset, what goes into that? What about these young people's mindsets who have had to deal with trauma and instability that most folks are very lucky to never have to conceive of? What mindset shifts are you looking to achieve with these young people?
So first, we're looking to make them feel safe. We're looking to make them feel heard. And we're looking to provide what they need. So the mental service, the mental health services that they need, we provide those needs. The wraparound services when, okay, my lights are off, or I don't have any groceries, or I'm not sure where I'm going to stay, we're meeting those needs with program partners like Release Outreach and Joy Baltimore and other organizations that we're in alignment with to create stability. When there's deprivation and there's not stability, we know we're going to have violence and upheaval. We're going to have that. So we're committed to the mindset of, okay, let me relax because I have a village. I have a community. I have people who see me. I have people who care. I have people who will help if I use my voice and say, I need help. I need something.
And to many folks out there who hear that, I feel that those are things that are taken for granted by many folks. These foundational things, right? Safety, being heard, feeling seen, having access to food. Like these are all things that are foundational pieces of just being a person. And I think that you are uniquely positioned to give perspective on the canyon of difference in quality of life, and particularly for a young person who is going through adolescence. You said you start at 14 with Aziza Peace and trying to become an adult. The canyon of difference that having those things in place versus not having them in place. Can you speak a little bit more to that of a young person who has those things and the young person who doesn't?
I can certainly speak to that. When you asked me, how did this start, you know, and I think about my daughter, for instance. And though I am a single mom, our village, the love and the safety that she experienced allowed a space of resilience that many of the young people that we deal with don't have. The commitment to her quality of life had her navigate that school, University of Maryland, Columbia, and have a career that she had the audacity to dream about and believe could happen. We have young people who don't know to dream, don't know to hope, because you're in a survival mode. So if I'm thinking, I don't even know if I'm going to get up tomorrow, if I'm going to have a meal, if I'm going to see my mom, or how can I think to get in school and learn anything? How can I go to school and feel like I am able to do more than be here? You know, that, like, this is why we have chronic absenteeism, because somebody's outside hungry. Mm-hmm. Somebody didn't sleep somewhere. It's like these are children with adult issues. And so we can clearly see the difference. I can see the difference every day in the young people who come with us, some of them who, you know, it varies. We have mothers, that are working every day. So those children are not so much neglected in needs, just in time and attention. So we can meet that. And then we have those who are living in bandos and not knowing where their meals are coming from, making sure their clothes are washed or doing their hair because they won't go to school because their hair is not done. All of these small things that we take for granted are colossal when you deal with peer pressure and school and things like that. It's colossal.
And can you speak a bit to what being a young person with a community after not having one for however many years, what that does to the young people you work with every day when they come in and they finally feel that safety, they finally feel heard, they feel seen, and they feel like they are in a space where they can be taken care of the way that a young person, a child, should be taken care of? What does that do to these young people?
Agency happens. So it's, I know who I am, I know what I'm capable of doing. And so what happens, the kid that was not going to school, now chronic absenteeism isn't a thing. So then academic performance increases. Now I'm in school because now I love myself and I know I'm loved and I know I'm supported. So then I show up for myself. So if I'm showing up for myself, I'm not harming my community. I'm not, you know, I'm not failing. I'm not doing some of the things that I was doing prior to coming here because I feel it's possible. I feel that my dreams can be achieved. And that's our job. Our one job is to help young people to fall in love with themselves so that they become the change we need to see. That's our job.
And that last point that you made there, help young people fall in love with themselves. That is something that I find fascinating. And I'd like to hear more about that. Just what that means to fall in love with yourself and how that relates to agency.
Right. So primarily our young people are Black and brown. We are Black and brown. Mm-hmm. We are an example of lived experience for them. So we're able to translate the journey in a way that is real to them, where when I'm in a school and I don't see me, if I'm in a space and I don't see me, I don't know that it's possible. We are the evidence of possibility, right? And so when we're talking about the journey of self-actualization through our program, it starts with who am I? So not what I do, who am I being? Because my being is aligned to what I can do well. So what we do is we deal with that at a grassroots level, to the bone marrow, like who are you? Right. And then we deal with the things that influence who you become, the media, how you eat, what you're thinking, the choices you're making. So we have to learn to make choices. That's a skill. Right. Listening skills, communication skills, job readiness, career readiness, entrepreneurship, how to write a resume, how to speak to who you are. That is the body of work that is Aziza Peace. And so we produce people who love themselves, because if I know that, hey, I'm a pretty dope individual, right? And I'm capable of achieving major things. That's how you move, because you believe it.
My name is Gabe Ortiz, speaking right now with the director, founder, and chief change maker over at Aziza Peace, a youth outreach program here in Baltimore. One more question before I let you get out of here, Saran. Thank you so much again for giving us some time today. When we look at the relationship that organizations like yours and the city has, what more would you like to see from the city when it comes to helping you achieve your ultimate mission of being sure that young people in Baltimore have spaces where they feel safe, have the agency to become the people that they want to be? What more would you like to see from the city, which seems to be going through a bit of an evolution right now, and particularly over the past couple of years? And if your voice is to be heard in that evolution, what would you hope they hear from you?
Investment. It needs to be more investment investment in programs that are not necessarily the ones they believe are doing the work, but the ones that are grassroots, boots on the ground, that are doing the work, right? And to possibly move in a space where some of the funders and a primary funder that we have that I consider is under attack, simply because of the investment in programs that are like ours, right? And then you get all of this political challenges that are rooted in racism that stops the investment from being continuous. Because you get to a space where if I give you $50,000 this year, and then you don't have it next year, you're chasing money and you can't focus on the work, investment, time, finances, and understanding the scope of work that is shifting the youth in your city. That's investment. That's the key.
We got about a little over 30 seconds here. If anybody wants to keep up to date with everything Aziza Peace is doing, or if they want to get involved, what's the best way they can find you?
They can find us on the web at www.aziza-peace.org, or you can call 410-775-6652.
Saran Fawcett, the director, chief change maker, and founder of Aziza Peace in the City. I just want to thank you again for the time that you gave us here at WYPR. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
Coming up next on WYPR, we're going to be speaking with Brian Sears of Maryland Matters in regards to the failed negotiations between Governor Wes Moore, his administration, and AFSCME, the largest union representing state workers here in the state of Maryland. All that and more coming up on the other side. If you're just joining us and you missed our conversation with Saran Fawcett or with the public safety reporter at the Baltimore Sun, Dan Belson, you can go catch both of those later today on the WYPR app or at WYPR.org. We'll be right back after a quick break.
This is 88.1 WYPR, Baltimore's NPR news station.